Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Okay, welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast. I'm Ray McLennan.
And I'm Nigel Best.
And today's episode was kind of freestyling here, but it's what's prompted this episode is two things. One is, received a message, and it was from someone I didn't know, but just said, do you not feel bad about getting people into debt? And it was all this question about morality and the morality of money and the morality of debt. So that was the sort of first thing we wanted to talk about.
It's just triggered a train of thought, hasn't it? And the second one was last night, just getting into my car, and there was a young lady who was in a bad way, who was needing money. But this is kind of late at night, wandering down the street, effectively begging. It just prompted the question about, you know, society, where we are, people that go down the capitalist route, I know a lot of people are against it, but then is there a chance for philanthropy to kick in and help people that always need support in society?
Well, yeah, I suppose.
But I mean, this is very crude, a really crude analogy, but obviously she's pitching for money.
She is pitching for money.
And was it the right way of doing it?
And is she successful? So talk about, first of all, then, this message about, the message we got about debt, getting people into debt. Is it good or bad?
Yeah.
You know, is it right or wrong? What's the morality of it? All right, well, my approach is that there's two types of debt. There's good debt and bad debt. Now, good debt is where you're purchasing assets. You're purchasing assets, and effectively they lead to a cash flow. So what we do is we help people to either raise money to start a business, grow a business, ideally scale up a business, or to purchase assets such as...
So fundamentally, they've got one word, debt, that describes a whole myriad of types of debt.
Yeah.
And what we're going to be kind of explaining is the fact that there's potentially good debt, bad debt.
Yeah, exactly. There is good debt and bad debt. So the good debt, you purchase assets that creates a cash flow that allows you to feed your family, employ people, etc. And then there's bad debt, which would effectively be, you know, credit
you
card.
You consume it.
To go on a holiday, consumer debt, yeah.
Consumer
you buy the
debt.
Biggest, latest flat screen telly and sits on your wall and it doesn't actually generate anything and it diminishes in value.
Yeah.
So that's why I have no problem with what we're doing, because what we're doing is encouraging people to effectively either borrow money or engage with investors, give them equity, to create growth.
Yeah.
And from a moral point of view, I have absolutely no problem at all, because segues nicely into your beggar analogy, is that I find that most of the investors I deal with contribute a lot, and not just in jobs and taxes, but they also are all big givers to charities and big contributors from that point of view. And they all do it quietly. You know, they don't.
No shouting about it.
No, they're not shouting about it. Or
it's not
like
smashy and nicey. A lot of work for charity.
Charity bait, dot off. They just do it nice and quiet. But there are even some, and there's an organisation called B1G1, Buy One, Give One, where you can do it on a regular basis. You just, you do.
The biggest problem is, if everyone decided, okay, I'm not going to grow, I'm not going to create jobs, money, wealth, then who the heck pays for helping people that, you know, get into trouble, get societies, ones that could easily be forgotten? And you only need to look at certain countries where there is no welfare state, there is no benefits, there is no sort of voluntary organisations who are able to spend their time and help people. So this, it's such a tricky thing, and we've been just having a chat. I mean, we're sat outside at the moment, so we've got
background noise and a bit of breeze. Ray's being harassed by wasps and what have you. That's because he's just so sweet, folks. He's just so sweet. But we're sat here and we're just kind of pondering this, and we're thinking, God, this is a thorny subject. Are we going to really provoke some outrage and what have you in the way that we're sort of talking about it, discussing it, thoughts on it?
Well, okay.
The idea is not to do that.
Well,
he's to kind of, yeah, let's get a debate going.
Okay, well, the debate going is, and most of the time it comes down to this, is it, you know, what's best, capitalism or socialism or communism and all this kind of carry on? Well, you know, capitalism's so far is the best that we've got. It's not perfect, but it's the best we've got. And as I always say, socialism works if there's enough capitalists to pay for it. Because socialism only works if they can tax people. And they can only tax people if people produce something. Governments don't produce anything. It's a big, you know, it's a big mistake a lot of people have. And this whole talk about, you know, money from the government or money from Europe and all that kind of thing, well, it has to come from somewhere. And where it comes from is, you know, the wealth formula. You have a business, you create wealth by providing a service. If people are prepared to pay for that service, that's great. The better the service, the more people will pay, therefore the more tax you will make and so on.
Yeah.
And part of that tax goes to the government, and the government will distribute that tax to, you know, the NHS and worthy causes and all the rest of it, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, I mean, essentially all the government services are consumer services. So it's consumed, it's on services, and there's nothing essentially produced for the majority of it.
No,
there are some things, but it's this thing that, you know, we were talking about the story. I don't know the truth of it, but I'm assuming that it is correct that when certain areas have had capitalist approaches and then they've swapped to socialist approaches, and then the socialism fails and they go back, it's the same people who tend to recreate the capitalist approach.
Well, so there is, I remember many years ago, somebody said, it might have been Zig Ziglar or someone like that, who said, if you took all the money in the world, you know, take all the money in the world, bang, it's all here, right at my feet, and you distribute it evenly amongst every person on the planet,
it's going to...
Then a year's time, it'll all be back in the hands or in the pockets of the people that had it a year ago.
Yeah.
Unless you do something completely different.
And do you think that's a mindset?
Totally. Absolutely. Of course it is. It's completely a mindset. I mean, if you look, I remember again reading about a guy, Robert Allen his name was, in America, and he did this whole no money down thing, and he did this challenge where it was the New York Times or somebody like that. His challenge was, he said, if you send me to any country, any city in the country, in America, with just a cell phone, no money, I will make money. And the film crew decided they were going to take him somewhere, and he didn't know where he was going to go. They got him a ticket on a plane, the film crew followed him, he got off the plane, and within days, he'd made money. And by the end of the week, he'd made $30,000 or something. He'd made it from nothing with just the mobile phone. Now, that is a total mindset.
Without a doubt.
Total mindset, because, you know, you could teach somebody what to do, but they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, they think they might be able to do it, because that's the difference in theory and practice.
Yeah.
And a lot of the investors that I know, wealth creators that I know, they do it. They don't talk about it. And yet, it's interesting that the majority of the, I suppose, socialists who talk about theory are academics. They know the theory, but they don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's in the doing that you're going to actually find the magic, and it's in the doing that you're going to make the money, not the theory of it. The theory is it should go this way, but as you know, best laid plans and all the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember I was very lucky to go to university and did economics and business management as a subject. I can remember, sadly, very little about it, other than the head tutor of the course, when he was beginning to discuss issues and talk about theories and what have you, he said, now you've got to realise that I've written academic papers on this, I have studied it, but I went from school to university, back into university, and I have never actually worked at all. And he said, so everything I say, he said, in reality, I have absolutely no idea if it works. and we all just went, oh, well, that, yeah, thanks for being honest. But, yeah. You know, okay, well, let's do the theory.
You could have told us at the beginning of the academic year.
Yeah, and it's definitely a case that, putting it into practice is a very different thing. And in theory, socialism sounds absolutely fantastic. But you get into the argument of freeloading and free rides, and then who does it? And then if everyone decides, well, I'm not doing it either, it's tricky. But what we're talking about here is the issue raised by the person talking about debt is if you took that email literally and said, oh, okay, well, we should have no debt whatsoever and no one should borrow anything for anything. Yeah. And we'll all just stay here and make sure we're not in debt. Well, we're going to end up in a pretty sorry state at that point. So what we're trying to reiterate again is, look, if you're trying to raise money and you want to raise it for something that you are going to consume, and essentially there's very little chance of you repaying it, not many people are going to give you that without the caveat of something like an interest rate of 25,000% a year.
Well, that, I mean, isn't that the irony of it? You know, the people who need it most.
Get
you know, if you look at,
totally
what is it called?
Stung.
Bright House or something. You go there, you can buy a sofa at 50 pence a day or 50 pence a week.
Yep.
But when you look at the APR on it, it's horrendous. Payday loans, you know, it's another thing. I mean, that yes, okay, talking about debt, that's bad debt. That is most definitely bad debt.
It's bad debt in the end of it, but it's a situation where people are desperate and need that debt.
And that is the thing. Desperation costs money.
It does.
You know, going back to the beggar of, you know, holding the hands out and saying, can you give me some money? I take that on. She was given some money, not by you, but by one of the other people in the group, gave her the money, and she complained it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I can't even buy, you know,
some food.
I can't even buy a coffee with that.
Yeah.
You know, you only gave me a quid. You know,
the issue there was, all of us kind of thought, there's got to be a way of turning that person's life around. And a few pounds isn't going to do it.
Well, the first challenge, I suppose,
is... That's the annoying thing.
Well, it is annoying. But if you look back historically, Roman times, there were beggars. You know, all through the Middle Ages, all through Victorian times, you know, there have always been beggars. There are people who will just, you know, that's just the way they are, and there's not an awful lot you can do. Some of them, it's their circumstances, and that's tragic. But it's a very, very difficult problem. All you can do is alleviate it, I think. And when it comes down to alleviating and problem solving, that is a massive, massive problem that is probably never going to go away. So what can you do about it? What can you do about it when you're...
Do you feel compelled to try and be as successful as possible so that you have the ability to help people like that?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
You see, this is it. And I don't think sometimes, when you talk about it, you know, we've mentioned it, and you say, right, okay, if you distributed everything to everyone, even if you told everyone how you could do it, you'd still have 19 out of 20 people would not do it.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
And so I feel that, you know, whoever wants to have a go should be encouraged to do it because they have the knock-on effect of supporting the other 19 in some way, shape or form. So it surprises me when people sort of say you shouldn't do this.
Well,
because do they understand the full cycle of events?
No.
I don't know. Is it easy to just throw an insult, throw a challenge, without sort of sitting down and going... Can you tell me more?
If we were all the same, the world would be pretty boring, I suppose.
Well, that's true.
And there are always going to be people that are going to challenge things, and that's, you know, that's absolutely fine. When it comes to the problem solving, the bigger problems that there are, the more money you need to help it. It's simple as that. Now, you cannot help every single person, but I remember the analogy of, you know, I think it's Easter Island, when these red crabs migrate towards the sea, and you've probably seen a National Geographic film of them, but there's like millions of them all going towards the sea, and they cross this road and lorries and cars and buses are driving back and forward, and they're just crunching them underfoot because, you know, there's just so many of them. And when they get to the beach, there's rocks everywhere and they can't actually get to the sea. It's very difficult. And there was a woman walking along and she'd pick one up and throw it into the sea. And a man said to her, "You're not going to make any difference." And she said, "Well, I made a difference to that one."
Yeah.
And then she'd pick up another one and throw it and said, "I made a difference to that one."
Yeah.
And that's really all you can do. In a huge problem, you can only you can only get down to the basic level and help one person at a time. That's the way to reach the world, is one person at a time, not to try and solve the whole problem.
Yeah.
So when I see investors, angels, whales, high net worth guys, they tend to, when they get serious amounts of money, they tend to create foundations, institutions, charities, family trusts, family offices, that sort of thing. And then they will dedicate themselves to a particular cause that's local to them or close to them. So they tend not to give, you know, they wouldn't give £1 million to Oxfam, for example. But what they would do is they'd build an HMO, or they'd buy an HMO, and they would subsidize it.
Yeah.
Or they would build an apartment block, and they would hand it over to shelter or something like that, and say, look, you can have that. Don't pay me anything for it. You know, yeah. I'll own the building, but you can have it rent free.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And they don't do that because, you know, they feel bad or guilty. They do it just because we're in a community and we've all got to help each other. And it really annoys me when people talk about, you know, fat cats, and the press will always throw up an example, and it will be, you know, Philip Green, you know, greedy bastard.
Yeah.
You know, he did this, he did that, he did the next thing. Okay, but you don't actually know anything about what he does, really.
No.
But on the surface, maybe he is like that. I don't know him personally. But I do know people that have a similar amount of wealth. And the one common denominator is that they're always contributing to something. Always. I've attended an event where investors were asked, would you rather pay, I think it was 30% tax to the government, or 20% tax and 20% to a worthy cause that you can control. So in other words, 40%.
Yeah, yeah.
Guess what they all went for?
Yeah, yeah, well.
Lower tax to the government, more to a worthy cause.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it anyway. Because most governments, most councils, most anything that's governmental, unfortunately, is mostly poorly managed. And the thing about successful businesses and successful business people is they're very efficient. Because by definition, they're making money, so they're doing something right.
Yeah.
Whereas governments hemorrhage money and lose money, and therefore successful business people don't want to hand over their hard-earned cash to an inefficient organization.
It's a tricky situation, isn't it?
It is a tricky situation. So they do...
I mean, and talking of governments, how to raise money, that is, you know, number one, front and center for every government. How
raising
the heck
money.
Do we raise money?
Yeah.
To do all these things.
But and their answer is more tax, more tax, more tax.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the answer, because I think it was Alexander the Great, it was called Alexander the Great, because every country he conquered, he imposed a 10% tax regime, and people had been used to being paid much more. And he said, no, we'll just make it 10%, flat rate, everyone can work that out.
Yeah.
And guess what? You see it even now, whenever they reduce, or whenever they reduce the tax rate, the tax take, the amount of money they get goes up.
Well, I was reading the other day and someone had calculated that the tax burden at the moment is the highest it's been for about 40 odd years.
Well,
how many of the taxes could you name? The average man in the street, name.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on and on and on. And I think in some ways, do the government raise their money by stealth, by sort of hidden means, by unavoidable means?
Well, you know, I mean, if you look at, I mean, you take countries around the world like Monaco, where there's no tax, you know?
Yeah.
And they're highly successful, highly efficient organizations.
Yeah.
Like, other people would argue about that, and it's probably a valid argument. But then you've got somewhere like Venezuela, which, you know, had all the mineral wealth.
Oil.
Huge. Yeah, well, huge oil.
Huge,
you know,
natural petrol, resources.
Petrol was $1 a gallon. Everything was heavily subsidized, and then Hugo Chavez decided to change a few things, and then his successor came in, and look at the country now, it's completely and utterly ravaged to the ground. Completely ravaged to the ground. So I don't think that for one minute you can, and that's a clear example of trying to distribute the wealth amongst as many people as possible. Without the wealth creators, and without the, because it's about 20 to 1, so for every person that provides work, provides jobs, you know, does something, sets up a business that's going to grow, there are about 20 others, 19, 20 others, who are going to be looking to be employed. Equally so, if you take the percentage of the population and the number of beggars that there are around, probably as a percentage, it's probably never changed in 2,000 years. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Now, you can help and alleviate. There will always be people that will fall through the net who don't want to be there, and they quite rightly should be helped. But there will be those who, there's nothing you can do for them. And you ask the question, is it mindset? Totally.
And the old question, the best way to help the poor is not be one of them.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
But in terms of, just going back to the government, and here's the sort of juxtaposition of why we would sort of talk about saying private companies or private organisations, individuals, those sort of individuals who have struggled to raise the money because they know how difficult it is, nurture and care for that money and make sure every pound is spent in the best way possible to get the best return. Is it a case, what's your thoughts on the fact that for all local authorities, governments, raising the money is, it just appears. Is there then, because it's not, for the people that then spend it and administer the services and what have you, is there anything in there? Because they haven't had to physically go out and have the meetings to try and raise this money, is there then a lesser sort of thought process about, well, we've got it, more will come and we can just spend it?
Well, okay, if you take a local authority imposes council tax on people, and so they know right in advance, we've got so many houses, each house is £1,000, whatever it is, they know that that's the money they're going to get, right? That's coming in no matter what.
Yep.
And the way it's distributed amongst departments and, you know, in the Ministry of Defence or in other branches of the NHS and all this, it's done in a similar way. You're given a budget, you have to spend that budget.
Yeah.
If you don't spend the budget, it's going to be reduced
next time.
And I've spoken to people in the NHS who said, we've got rooms full of computers that we don't need because we had to buy them before the deadline. Otherwise, we were going to lose our budget. So the reward system and the whole system of accountability is completely on its head. It's ridiculous. I was going to say, don't get me started, but you may already have.
I was going to say, well, I'll quickly elbow you off the soapbox on that one.
Elbow me off the soapbox.
Because I've sat through so many local authority meetings where the nonsense espoused is just breathtaking. It is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, for things, why every council has to interpret things and do their own thing, do it differently? Incredible. However, I mean, they raise money in a very different way to you or I, or most of the economy.
Yeah.
So there is no law saying that someone has to contribute to our fund, you know, that we can do. And ultimately, there's no repayment of it.
No.
That's the crazy thing. So could you ever have a system that administers and makes it work as well as possible if you're not, there's no skin in the game for you raising the money and you don't actually have to ever repay it? All your job is to spend it.
Yeah. No,
a beautiful position to be in, is it?
It is a crazy situation. When I'm Supreme Leader, I'm going to overhaul the whole thing, I have to say. I'm just going to overhaul the whole thing. I remember reading, actually, anecdotally, talking about councils and things, and I must actually go and search this, but the gist of it was that local councils in the UK are highly inefficient, okay?
Yep.
They have got loads of councillors, and the councillors all attend meetings and they all get expenses and all this kind of carry on. And in the town that I'm from, which is Edinburgh, there's something, a ridiculous number of councillors, each representing a ward.
Okay? Yep.
And I don't know what the number is, but it's 75 or something like that, right? There's all of these councillors. And then the same system there of councils and how they were operated was exported to America. So in America, and it may have been Austin, Texas, somewhere like that, they had this historic way of dealing with local authority and collecting the bins and all the things they needed to do.
Yeah.
And they decided to overhaul it. They decided to do it around a structure of a company and have a board of directors, have a managing director, and have 12 directors. Each would be responsible for their own area. So there'd be one for roads, one for bin collection, one for lighting, you know, all that stuff.
Okay,
And they decided to do away with all the councillors. After about 4 or 5 years, they became so efficient that they reduced the council tax.
Okay? There you go.
they didn't need the number of jobs and all the rest of it. So they decided to hold a symposium and invite councils from the UK and from the rest of America to attend to find out how it was done and how to become more efficient. And very few attended.
Yep.
That says it all. That's turkeys voting for Christmas. And that's the system that's got to change.
So well, what's the incentive to change?
If there isn't one.
No, there isn't one. This is the problem.
Well, here's when I'm Supreme Leader, here's my solution.
Here we go.
My solution is...
Is this your manifesto coming out?
This is my
right
manifesto
here.
Coming out. All this
right.
is it coming
okay.
out.
Now, when does voting open?
You always hear, when people get older, right? People get older, they always say, bring back national service. You know, that's what they need. You know, they need to be drilled around the parade ground and all that stuff.
Yeah, beatings will increase until morale improves.
Correct, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not in favour of that. What I am in favour of, though, is... When you finish your school or university education, you ought to work for 2 years in local government or national government.
Yeah.
For 2 years, that's okay. it. That's your national service to see how it works.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you're released out into the world.
Okay.
We should not have career politicians that do more than 3 terms.
Yeah.
To become a politician or to become a government minister, I feel you ought to have a track record of something.
Yeah.
Which is not going to university, doing economics and politics, becoming a researcher for an MP, and then becoming an MP yourself.
Okay.
I just think that's completely wrong.
Yeah.
My grandfather, great-grandfather, was the Lord Provost of the town we were in. He wrote articles about government, and he strongly felt that there should be no... He felt there was going to be career politicians in the future, and it would be a disaster for the country. And he wrote that in 1908 in a newspaper article that I read.
110 years ago.
In 1908, he said, career politicians will ruin the country. A man should have a basis in commerce and should, you know, have experience of employing people and should have experience of running his own business before he has experience of running his government.
Well, here's the thing. I am being hugely stereotypical here, but in the UK, two main parties, Conservative and Labour, and it always used to be, I seem to remember, was the Conservatives have been in business, generally run their own business, own enterprise or something, and Labour would have been in the big industries and had come up through the unions or had a union interest, or so they'd all been involved in dealing with people.
Yeah.
Dealing with people, dealing with business, from different sides of the table.
And it was a good balance. It's a good balance.
But it was, because you didn't have one necessarily shouting down the other forever.
Well, it's a good balance, because if you're...
But now, could you name a politician who, you know...
Could you name a politician?
All right. Don't put me on the spot, hell's bells.
It's only about two or three.
It's only a podcast. It's not the Spanish Inquisition, for God's sake.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Their chief weapon is surprise.
And you got me. So,
we got off topic here.
I don't know. Where are we? We're in the Ramblers Association podcast, aren't we?
Oh, geez. So we were talking about...
It's all about this how to raise money sort of thing.
To try and refocus. We're coming to the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
We were talking about debt. We were talking about beggars. We were talking about problem solving and bigger problems. We've spoken about all the money in the world being transferred and being back in the same pockets. We've spoken about mindset.
Yeah.
And I dare say the theme of this has to be that debt, begging, raising money. It's all about
spending
mindset.
Money.
It's all about mindset.
Being in control of money, being custodians of money, is all about the attitude you have
and
what you've. And often that's taught. Not necessarily in school or whatever. Taught by observing the person ahead of you.
Yeah.
And around and those people around you, and if everyone's doing it in a certain way, chances are you'll do it that way as well.
Well. And on that bombshell.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, I think it's time I went off and found a magic wand and started waving it and solving all the problems, because it does leave me very saddened when you see things, because you always want to stop and just help everyone, and it's deeply frustrating when you can't.
You can only help people once you've solved your own problems and sorted your own problems.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier on, the best way to help the poor is to not become one of them.
Exactly. So there we go. Definitely, if you're looking to raise money,
It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. You can do some wonderful things with it, and just go out there and make a difference.
Absolutely. And, so on,
have we had any letters?
Well, we did. We got that one about debt.
We got the one about
debt. That stimulated all this off. So what I would say is, if you're listening to this podcast, you want to get in touch, then by all means, get in touch. I'm Ray at raisingangelfinance.co.uk.
I'm Nigel, and you can get me at nigeltbest.com.
You could find us on Facebook, Twitter, you search around there. You can go to the website, howtoraisemoney.co.uk, and you will see links and things in there. And get in touch if there's some subject you would like us to discuss, if you disagree with anything we've said, if you agree with anything.
If you disagree with anything you said, tough.
Then get in touch.
But I hope you've enjoyed this slightly different format. Coming up soon, we've got some really interesting people. So we're going to be getting out and about, interviewing people, talking to people, and it's amazing what people can do, problems that they solve, and the rewards that you can get for doing that. But also, some of these people have raised phenomenal amounts of money.
We're going to be interviewing someone who's raised over 500 million. We're going to be interviewing people who have helped lots of people raise money. We're going to be interviewing people who've coached people to pitch for money. There's a whole load of interviews lined up. Names and details will be released later, but there's a lot on the horizon.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. Ray, I've really enjoyed this chat. If it's been a bit breezy on the recording, I do apologise, but we're making good use of this beautiful weather here. And leaves us just to wish you all a wonderful day.
And see you on the next podcast.
Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. You can find all that at howtoraisemoney.co.uk. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ray_McLennan and Nigel Best at Positive Nigel. You can check the blog at raisingangelfinance.blogspot.co.uk. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?